This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
This is The Joe Gaither Show on BamaCentral.com.
Good morning, Tuscaloosa. Internet world, West Alabama, how we doing today on this beautiful Wednesday? Happy hump day to you and yours. It is the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central, BamaCentral.com. You guys are hanging out with us on the Bama Central YouTube channel, on the Bama Central Facebook channel. You're with me on my own social media machines at JoeGaither6. Or you are my favorite, listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon. We appreciate you so, so much. Checking out The Joe Gaither Show on your favorite platform. Go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you are getting The Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central, BamaCentral.com. We're live in the Derek Daniels State Farm Studios right here off of McFarland Boulevard right here in Northport. You can find Derek and his team just past the Tiger Rock on the left. Call them today at 205-758-3391 for all of your insurance needs. Like a good neighbor, Derek Daniel is there. He's got Red Reese and Victoria upstairs. Sorry, just a little Nico Yamaliava tweet coming through right there. He's got Red Recent Victoria upstairs, and they'd be happy to talk to you about all your insurance needs. Call them today, 205-758-3391. We are live on a Wednesday. We got a lot to get into with Mason Woods. Follow him at MAWoods_ on the Twitter machine. Writing all things recruiting for the Walsh Writing website. He's got BamaCentral.com, Missouri on SI, Boston College on SI, Vanderbilt on SI as well. So all things recruiting. He is up to his neck talking to high schoolers. Mason Woods, how are we doing?
Oh, doing good this morning. Doing good. That Nico tweet there is, funny little spot to maybe just start just a quick little note on. Like, it just seems like he has so horribly overplayed his hand. Interested, yes, but there's an extra like, oh, I really just want to see what happens here to it. You know, it's more than just a regular interest. I cannot wait to see how this saga concludes, because it is a disaster for him. We need the like DJ Khaled, you played yourself, just hit it over and over and over and over, because ooh wee. But yeah, I'm doing good today. I had a nice day yesterday.
News yesterday that there were multiple teams waiting to get involved in the Nico Yamaliava sweepstakes if he dropped his asking price to $1 million.
Clearance Nico.
Buddy, you had 2.5 in your pocket, and you could have played like trash at Tennessee and still had all 2.5.
Man, oh man, oh man.
And then hit the portal and then cashed in. Ooh. So what do we find yesterday? Yesterday, Tulane bows out.
UNC bows out, I believe.
I don't know if they're out.
Are they not out?
Okay. I don't know if they're out. I think UNC is the play, okay, because Bill Belichick is.
So I had seen they were in the lead for this South Alabama quarterback, Gio Lopez, I think is his name.
Gio Lopez, North Carolina. Well, my thought with North Carolina was, this is Bill Belichick 101. This is, sure, we take troublemaker. We take broken Randy Moss, trouble Randy Moss. We take, over the hill. This is the Nick Saban rehab just through the Bill Belichick eyes. And then you think about Bill Belichick is, I'm going to take 7th round draft pick Tom Brady and make him into a superstar. This is perfect for him. I'm high value, what is it? Low dollars, high upside, rehab project. It sounds like you are. Okay. The random tweets that I saw yesterday from Tulane were that they had offered him a significant amount of money
But it wasn't $4 million. It was like two and a half with incentives to get him to four and change. And believe it if you want to, or don't believe it if you don't want to. Allegedly, the father didn't want to have incentive-based guarantees. Wanted to make sure we got the four and a half. And didn't want to have the perception dip of going to the of not playing power four football. Like, buddy.
Somebody
needs to smack this father and bring him into the reality.
Yeah, I saw someone call him LeVar Ball without any charm.
We're probably reading the same tweet thread because that was in there.
And that's not a good thing to be called, because LeVar Ball was not the most charming individual, I thought.
Thank you. Wasn't that his little thing?
Oh, yeah, this is... It really, really continues to, as more and more information comes out, to kind of just seem like this is the people around Nico less than it is himself. But at the end of the day, he's an adult. He can make decisions for himself. If, you know, I understand that there's a different cultural thing with him being Samoan and everything. Like, yeah, the father runs a lot of things, as I understand it, but I don't know, man. At some point, you got to just, you know, look at things objectively. You're making an objectively bad decision here. Now, it's too late. You know, you've made your bed. You're going to have to lie in it now. But, you may want to reconsider who you have, you know, making your decisions for you.
How do you think Josh Heupel receives any of these little, like, tidbits of news yesterday? Ooh, Tulane bows out. Oh, this. Oh, that. Oh, we'll jump in the sweepstakes if it's $1 million. No more.
You think he sent Nico's dad a text, be like, we'll take him for $25,000.
Yeah, who was it? There was was it Peter Burns? It was somebody that I saw yesterday that was like, this is perfect. Heupel needs to give him an olive branch, and they need to be like, you can have less than your original deal and XYZ, ABC, cha-cha-cha. I mean, it's over. It's not over.
I think Tennessee fans have decided that Nico is
mud.
Equivalent to a terrorist. I think I saw a lot of people calling him.
Somebody said he Lane Kiffened us, and Lane like tweeted it. It was like, what? You know, blindside.
Oh man,
I didn't want to start with Nico, but no, we're here.
Yeah, that. And I don't really have a lot else on it other than just like everybody knows. I think he knows now. He's made the wrong decision. And they're just trying to, you know, grasp at whatever straws they can get now and, you know, hopefully find some opportunity somewhere. I mean, I'm not going to say I'm rooting against him, you know, whatever.
No, but college football needs to send a message with
it. Yes.
The coaching staffs across the country need to all have each other's backs. I know this is a cutthroat. I know it. I know all you coaches would cut anybody else's throat out if they could, to get a recruit or anything else. I get that. It's your livelihood. It's your wife's livelihood. Your kid's livelihood. I get that. This needs to be a time where principles kind of matter.
Yeah. Please just no one cave to this.
Right. Because you're going to get a coach that's desperate. I looked at my quarterbacks this spring. They weren't that good. We got 1.2. I think we can make it work. Don't. Because, all right, you win an extra three games, coach, great. Man, you save your job or you lose your job. Okay, yes, that's a real big deal there.
It's just about
you're sending college football back, right?
Yeah, it's you have to consider more than just yourself. I think if you are a coach in the position to, you know, be in this race for Nico Iamaleava, I think you have to consider the long-term health of college football. And you know, going out and paying him.
Nico can come play for my school for the Alston money. And like, buddy, you can come. Here's a scholarship.
Yeah. You can get treated just like the rest of them.
You can get signed up with our school's NIL entity and do the autograph sessions like all the other guys.
You want to do some ad deals? Sure. We'll get you on some commercials.
Yeah.
I don't know how true that, but I did see, and again, I don't know if there's any truth to it, but saw some rumors that he was not holding up his end of the bargain at Tennessee with, you know, contractual obligations and things, autograph signings and stuff. Again, I don't know how much truth there was to that, but I just kind of saw that floating around as well. So it seems like for a while, you know, dating back for, I mean, well, I guess even from the moment he committed, you knew he was chasing money. But even throughout the time he's been at Tennessee, it seems like there's been some issues relating to NIL and things. So this was kind of bubbling under the surface for a while, maybe.
Mason, you're getting hit on in our comments. And as you react and, you know, take a deep breath. Yes. Nico says, like, apparently, even going back to high school, it was a highest bidder situation. Mm-hmm. Tennessee, you should be you shouldn't be surprised by any of this.
It's so such beautiful irony that Tennessee went out of their way, made such a, you know, threw such a fit over this recruitment. Oh, we didn't, you know, it wasn't favorable, whatever it was, you know, won this whole thing only for Nico to turn around and spit right back in their face.
It's weird. Like, it makes me defend Tennessee a little bit, but it makes me like really not like you, Nico. Like, you got a great deal. I'm sorry. I don't know what Bryce got to come to Alabama. I got a detail about this is what Bryce Young charges for an NIL post on social media. And so that gave me a little clue that, that boy, that fella, that sir, that man, was making a lot of money.
I saw a clip of him the other day, a little kid walking up asking for an autograph. Or it wasn't even that. It was just a little kid. Are you famous? He just goes, depends on who you ask, man. Depends on who you ask. And that was the most perfect response. It just made me like Bryce even that much more. Miss him. But yeah, I think he was living pretty well in Tuscaloosa.
But Bryce, that first year was on the bench, redshirted. Mm-hmm. I mean, didn't redshirt because he didn't. Who cares? Didn't matter. You're not gonna be here long enough anyway, buddy. So basically, you gave us those next 2 years, Bryce. I'm sorry. The whole Nico didn't play his first year and you still got your 2.5. Like, that's fine. It's part of the deal. It's baked into the contract. I get that. But then to come back on the third year of the deal, the last year of the deal, and to say, well, we need 2.5 more, is like, buddy, we gave you 2.5 for free. And maybe that's me being so like meathead brain. But like, I'm thinking, like, you already got the raise you're asking for yeah, doing nothing for pumping iron, for in film, like doing everything that a normal college freshman would be doing.
No,
so I'm offended. I'm sorry.
No, I think it is. It is. It's very disrespectful to, you know, just college football as a whole, like the whole sport. It's like, you know, kind of it feels like him and his family. And again, I don't know if it's really him as much as it is the people around him leading him down these ways. But regardless, it feels like they're trying to kind of put themselves above the sport, and no one is bigger than the sport of college football. No one's bigger than the sport of football. I don't know. The sport will go on a lot longer after Nico Iamaleava's done playing, and it's been going a lot before he was even born. So, you know, he is not bigger than football, and it feels like he's trying to act like he is.
That's the part that drives me crazy. It's like, I want them all to make money.
Yeah.
I want them all. And brother, if you are Bryce Young, if you're the most talented quarterback a program has ever seen, bathe in money.
Sure.
Well, I'm serious. I have no issue with that. But do the right thing. Mm-hmm. Don't skip out on Friday practice. Don't, hey, I threw for 400 yards last week. You going to give me a bonus? Mother bleeper, this is what we agreed to.
Yeah, it's
crazy. And we agreed to a lot to take care of you. It just drives me absolutely nuts. You want to, what else drives me nuts in college football? We're going to retire Travis Hunter and Shadur Sanders. Okay, Travis Hunter. You won the Heisman, Travis. Sure. That one's not really part of it. But Shadur Sanders? Oh, daddy's kid gets his jersey in the gets his jersey hanging up. I guess it's not the rafters, but it's going to be on the rails of right in front of the luxury boxes, or right in front of the upper decks, or whatever they do. I know where it is at Tennessee. Alabama does not have a retired jersey, I don't believe.
Not that I know of.
None none in Bryant-Denny Stadium.
Yeah, you know, you got Shadur Sanders right up there with Rashawn Salaam. I'm assuming Cordell Stewart.
Cordell is not retired.
Oh, wow.
Cordell Stewart's jersey. That's what got me.
That's insanity.
Jacked up.
That's really crazy. Because
one of my likes is about that. So that's give me
like
a second.
That was the only thing that I like knew about Cordell. I didn't really watch him play. I just knew, hey, that guy, he was like good at Colorado. That's the only thing I know about him, because I saw some highlights when I was a kid one time on YouTube. But I think that tells you all you need to know. Like, the guy was synonymous with Colorado. That's crazy. I saw some, obviously, a lot of discussion about this.
Cordell Stewart won 2 bowl games, finished in the top 10 twice, not retired.
That's crazy. That's far more than what Shador did. What is 13-11 over 2 seasons?
1-8 in Pac-12 play.
What are we doing, man? Like, Deion.
Cordell went 11-1, led you to the Fiesta Bowl win and beating Notre Dame, finishing with a number 3 overall ranking. Not retired. Eric Bieniemy, not retired. Philip Lindsay, not retired.
Philip Lindsay, yeah, I forgot about him. This is it's so ridiculous. Like, it is so insane. Deion. You have
where does the line, Deion?
Come on. You're gonna retire. What about Shiloh? You gonna retire Shiloh's number 2? Like, what are we doing?
And what happens when Deion
they'll unretire the number?
Yeah, moves on, gets fired, goes to another job. I'm not trying to say anything bad. Well, like, isn't there.
I would make the first kid that you sign.
You're number wearing 2, number
or number 12, which I don't even remember who wore what. I think Travis Hunter was 12. There was 2.
Yeah, you're correct. You're correct. Number 2 and number 12.
The moment Deion leaves, is fired, whatever it is, the first quarterback I'm signing, he is rocking number 2.
That's insanity to me. Like, I know we want to support your son, give my son all the opportunities. Sure. Look, Nepo baby, we can talk about that. Okay, whatever. That's just the way the world works. But you gave him everything and more.
Yeah.
Everything and more. And more. And now the and more and more and more is you're getting your jersey retired not 2 months after your last college game. That's the other part. Like, how long do a lot of these legends that get their jerseys retired have to wait before? I mean, I know Reggie White's 98 is up there in Neyland Stadium. I know 16 is up there in Neyland Stadium. But, like, how long do they have to wait for that?
It's
2 months. You're good, bro. You're not even so in the league yet.
Insane. Like, so stupid.
Your first bye week, you can come back and we'll do the jersey. We'll do a jersey dedication, like the retirement ceremony for Travis on your first bye week when the Patriots have a bye week. And then when Shador, the Raiders get a bye week, you can come in and get your jersey retired. Are they?
It's just so dumb. It's just so incredibly stupid.
We're a healthy bit into this now. Are they just so stoned in Colorado that they don't care? They're cool, whatever.
Deion strikes me as the
not Deion, but like just the P. So Deion can do whatever he wants because everybody else is just like, whatever, man.
I do think a lot of the the people in and around the university, like the important people over there, are just so happy that this many eyes are on them that they don't care, which is unfortunate. But I do think that's why Deion has been allowed to just kind of do whatever the hell he wants out there, because they're like, at the end of the day, well, we have all this attention. We're getting a lot more, I'm sure their enrollment has gone up. Their freshman class, I would imagine the last 2 years has probably doubled in size. So, things are probably looking good in Boulder financially. So I imagine they're just content with letting Deion do what Deion does. Cause look, Colorado football, it's not like they've been good. Don't get me wrong, but it's not one of the blue bloods of college football or anything. So there's not some massive, population of older statesmen Colorado fans who are like banging the door down about this. I think that's probably a very, very quiet minority of fans out there that are that upset about, or even that passionate about Colorado football.
Those people are like, we're retiring somebody's jersey. Cool. We'll be there.
I think a lot of it probably is.
Cool.
Now, I would love to talk to one of those diehard Colorado fans and see what they have to say, because I bet they're pissed.
We drink. How many Coors banquets are they drinking during a Colorado game weekend?
Endless amounts.
Oh, Deion, don't call that play again. Whatever that is.
I mean, how much longer do you think Deion got at Colorado?
How much longer does Shiloh have?
Another year, I think, before he's no longer playing football, because he's not going to the NFL. He probably will with his name, but
no. I mean, I think that
I don't see him being there for the long haul or anything. So I have to imagine what within the next 15 years, Shador's number is unretired. Probably
think about that awkward scenario. And we're unretiring. We need a jersey. Like Alabama, you cannot retire jerseys because so many different people. What are you going to retire?
Retiring jerseys in college is dumb anyway. players are here for 3 to 4 years max. It's not like the professional league where you can have a guy play his whole career there and then it's like, sure, we'll retire your jersey or something. There are so many more players cycling through every year, especially now with the transfer portal and everything. Retiring numbers in college is just stupid.
All right. I hear you say that, and I do agree, but I'm going to spin us back to about two, 3 weeks. Are we still hanging a Mark Sears' jersey in the roster?
Well, I mean, if we're doing it, I guess, sure. But, I think
we're not hanging Nate Oates Jr.'s, Nate Oates Jr., his hypothetical jersey in the roster his 2 minutes a game.
Oh, yeah.
This is the equivalent of retiring Avery Jr.'s number. I mean, no, it's not.
It kind of is, though.
Shadur's better than Avery Jr. I mean, he is. Shadur's going to be a first-round draft pick. Avery's not playing in the NBA. Sure. But that's kind of what I see this like. Yeah. I'm like, imagine Coach Johnson's still here. And, hey, man, we're going to retire Avery's number. Avery was real good here. I would lose my mind.
See it up there every time you walk in. Johnson Jr.
I would do Terry Saxon Coleman to bring that thing down.
Yeah, that thing would be coming down the moment I saw it. It'd be thrown into the Black Warrior River.
Oh my gosh. So good job, Colorado, I guess. This is just Colorado being like, we're big time college football. This is what we do. This is what big time football programs do, right? We get a Heisman Trophy. We got to retire it. I don't know.
We'll see what they do this year.
Not a whole lot.
They got that quarterback from Liberty. I can't remember his name now.
Did they get Keaton Salter?
I think so, yeah.
I thought that they got Juju Lewis, the kid from Carrollton, the freshman from Carrollton. But I guess if they got Keaton Salter and a transfer Salter as well.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I thought Caleb Odom was going to end up transferring out there to go be with Juju Lewis.
I could have seen that as well. I mean, Ole Miss and Colorado, they're kind of two sides of the same coin.
Basically the same.
And, we talked
Johnny about, come lately, flash in the pan program.
Yeah, I mean, Lane Kiffin was making his podcast rounds this week. I can't wait to listen to him with Theo Vaughn. Oh, Joey Freshwater.
Joe, Lane, okay, we know it. He's funny. It's probably a funny hour, and I will listen to it today. But I ask you, are you a serious college football coach wasting an hour of your time with a podcaster? And I'm sure this is probably in some middle of some dead period or something, but like...
Transfer portal open today.
Do we really think that Kalen DeBoer...
You're the portal king, Lane.
Is Kalen DeBoer taking an hour to talk to... is it... Who's a good Alabama comedian? Funny Man Johnson? is he talking? I mean, but Theo Vaughn's from Louisiana. He's not from Mississippi.
We get like a south of just Nate Bargatze.
Yeah, perfect.
South, there we go.
Wasn't he the College Game Day picker?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, there we go.
And they seem like they'd have the same humor. Bargatze and Kalen DeBoer.
Yeah, I don't.
Kalen DeBoer, I don't curse. So
if you got DeBoer for like an hour, he wouldn't give you nothing.
No, you'd have to crack him wide open. You'd have to find the thing, and none of us have found the thing yet.
You'd have to get somebody to hit him with truth serum before he walked in or something, because he's just like stone face. Just we do. We have fun. Everything's good.
I think the thing is just football for him.
Maybe it is. Football is just everything. Football is what drives him. Football is what makes him move. He thinks about nothing else. That's possible. That'd be a good trait for a head coach.
We're gonna find the thing to crack Coach DeBoer open, but we'll figure that out. All right. So we'll listen to Lane Kiffin later today with Theo Vaughn. If you're an Ole Miss fan, are you happy that he's on for an hour, or are you feeling the same way that I am? Like, ooh, buddy, that's an hour wasted.
I'd probably be pretty stoked, honestly.
Is that recruiting? Listen. Am I being an idiot? And that is recruiting.
Possibly. I didn't even consider that.
Joe, you're a boomer now. Oh my god, I've made it.
We might have fallen by the wayside here.
He's getting on. Lane's getting his clips on TikTok so that 17, 16, 15 year old recruit sees and go.
You funny. I want to play that guy.
He and Theo.
Yeah, no, I think that's it.
He and Theo talking about girls. Because, you know, I'm sure there's a segment in that show about, you know.
Yeah, girls in Oxford.
Theo can't help himself. And Lane probably says something silly about,
I'm sure. Yeah, no, that's probably precisely what the reasoning for this was.
Okay, all right. Well done, Lane. 4D chess.
Yeah, hey, Portal King for a reason. Yeah, come to the sip. There we go.
Hashtag come to the sip.
I mean, I couldn't even begin to like guess what they're probably all going to get into because I've not, I like Theo Von. I've listened to a handful of the episodes of that show. Never really only when it's like some in very interesting.
He's just on
guest.
Drugs on those shows, is he? No, I don't. I've never watched.
He doesn't do drugs, supposedly.
Well, he used to.
I think he but they talk about it occasionally, but it's he is like.
You think Lane Kiffin does drugs? Don't answer that. Keep moving.
I think I don't know. The man's mind works in very interesting ways. There's never any bit of like structure to the conversation. It's just whatever comes out, and then they go to some interesting places in these interviews.
So we actually this just clicked with me. It's not DeBoer with Funny Man or with Nate Bargatze. He's got to get with Drewski, right? With Drewski and Roll Tide Willie and who's the young kid, Kai Cenat, who's like their kind of ancillary, who's the real big streamer.
Yeah, we got to get DeBoer on the streamer, on the Twitch stream.
Oh, with Kai Cenat. You want to hit the recruit? I mean, we're talking recruiting. You may as well go with the big. I only watched you for about 8 seconds in my entire life, Kai Cenat, but I know you're big.
Not for me. Is his content for like recruit age kids or is it for like younger children?
Oh yeah, even younger probably.
I feel like he's more in that like
8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
We're kicking robots over and calling it humor.
Yeah.
Like that's not funny.
Man, I saw that new robot that Boston Dynamics came out with. You see it, the one that's fully bipedal.
Is it going to kill me?
I would knock that thing out in a heartbeat. It looks soft as hell.
Oh, so it's not going to iRobot me?
It looks soft. I'd take that thing out.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
It tried to show off this little like side roll. It was just clunky. Yeah, no, I'm stomping that thing out.
All right, we're having fun here in the Dairy Daniel State Farm Studios. We just hit like 4 or 5 different little random ancillary topics to get us going. We're proudly sponsored by Warden Tire and Auto. We have been since the last couple of months. I just need to rework this, the first sentence. That's what trips me up now that I'm catching that over again. Warden Tire and Auto has been a Tuscaloosa and University of Alabama staple since 1961. They're in their third generation of family ownership. Warden Tire is the go-to place for all your automotive needs. They've got two great locations to serve you. For tires, brakes, and alignment, you can see them on 15th Street. Call them at 205-759-5505. For all your other automotive needs, Mason was talking about getting his AC done yesterday. They can get that done on University Boulevard, 205-758-2739. Warden Tire and Auto, your go-to place for all your automotive needs in West Alabama. Two great locations to serve you in, honestly, iconic places in Tuscaloosa. University Boulevard, right in between campus and the hospital, and 15th Street, basically in the shadow of Bryant-Denny Stadium. So you can see them in two great iconic places in Tuscaloosa. Get your cars in and out and back on the road. Warren Tire and Auto, we appreciate them sponsoring the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
All right, Mason, let's circle back to how we ended yesterday and what we need.
One bit of very interesting information for you.
Oh, please.
As of 28 minutes ago, North Dakota transfer Trayson Eaglestaff has decommitted from South Carolina and will be in the transfer portal and will be one of the top available players in the transfer portal. Once again.
Bleep that.
Very interesting. He said, he told Jeff Goodman, this is a quote in this tweet, you know, that Goodman tweeted out, quote, it was a difficult decision, but after discussing this with my family.
No, it wasn't.
This was the best course of action for my future. Thank you to Coach Paris in South Carolina for recruiting me during this process. Is he coming to Bama? Is that what this is?
I don't know. But
did Bama get together a pretty nice little NIL package for him?
Whatever it is, it's that.
Crazy.
You've been locked in for 5 days and now back in the portal because someone offered you more money, whether it was Alabama and we're all saying Roll Tide or Mississippi Western Tech U. I don't care. That's a problem. That is an issue. Problem. That is not right. And if you've come to Alabama and score a million dead gum points, I'm still going to say that's a problem.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you saw that, you know, Cal had, what, 4 running backs into the transfer portal all in one day yesterday. I saw that.
OTT to go.
You saw the guy tweet. He's like, he signed this helmet 2 days ago, and it said, "I'm not effing leaving, Jaden Ott."
Dang. H-O-T-R to go.
Man. There, I mean, there's just.
I love that parody this year. The Jaden Ott parody. The
O-T-T-O-T or O-G-O. You can take me Ott to go.
O-T-T-O-G-O. You can take me.
They had a good little run there for a minute. They were one of the good early season storylines, Cal was. But I mean,
that's a problem.
Loyalty is dead.
Like, I don't, loyalty, whatever. Like, you made a decision, and I'm sure South Carolina paid you whatever. Y'all worked out a deal, sure. 4-3,
whatever it was.
500,000, 300,000, a million. Who cares? I don't know what the.
They've been kicked back thinking we don't need to go get someone in the transfer portal now.
Now, here like, we are. When is it binding? When the portal's over in the next couple, I'm sorry, I'm offended by that.
No, because it's ridiculous. There's nothing is binding. There's no one there to hold these athletes accountable to these NIL deals that they have agreed to with schools. And, you know, by that same measure, it goes the other way too, where a lot of schools are not holding up their ends of the bargains for some athletes as well. But it just goes both ways. There's nothing holding either of them to their end of the bargain. So they can both just decide not to do it. Schools can decide not to pay athletes, and we've seen plenty of examples of that, plenty of lawsuits and things being levied at schools, and we see plenty of athletes just leaving on a whim because, oh, somebody offered me more, I'm out. Like, there has to be some sort of, and you know, it's, I don't know who it's going to be because it's obviously not going to be the NCAA, but there just has to be some sort of governing body in place that holds these parties accountable.
It's disgusting. I'm just thinking about Myles Garrett, and I was trying to think of a bear, but like Myles Garrett is the most recent prominent player. How many times has he wanted a raise from the Browns? 4, 5 in his career? He's been there 8 years, 9 years, and it's been constant. Give me another raise. I'm the best defensive player in the league. And you are. You're one of them. Great. And what ends up happening? Well, this is going to be my last time with my last year with the Browns. I'm going to end up moving to another team.
Want to play for somebody that can win.
Right. We're going you can put me on the trade block. Put me on the trade block. And what happens two, 3 weeks later? The Browns end up giving him more money. How does this, like, the Browns fans know if Myles Garrett's going to play for us, we're paying him X. If he wants to hold out because he wants more, he's not going to go play for the Steelers. He's not playing for the Ravens. He's not going to get more money from my rival Bengals. He's playing for the Browns. And if he doesn't like the money we're paying him, well, he's sitting his butt at home. And no, we're not watching him. Yeah, we're all disappointed by that, but we're not watching him play for our rival. Like, that's the factor. Like, if you want to come to your university and say, "Hey, coach, pay me more money," or "Okay, I'm not paying you more," like,
there's nothing stopping him from just saying, "All right, I'm out." Again, going to, like you said, he literally could just go to your rival.
It's offensive. It's really offensive. All right, I was trying to spin this to some positivity because Sunday day and Sunday day evening and Monday night was two great evenings for Alabama women's athletics. We'll start with basketball, and I don't want to get too deep into this because we're going to bring on Katie Windham tomorrow. I got to reconfirm with her today, but she's been pretty consistent the last two Thursdays. I think we're going to make it 3 in a row.
Great
Katie will
to the show.
Yeah, I'm
keeps mixed, us grounded a little bit. I think
grounded and smart. Yes, yeah, yes.
It provides us with the information that otherwise you would not be getting from me or Joe.
So Katie was in the building Saturday, Sunday, Monday. When she was, man, what a weekend for her. She went from A Day into Alabama, Oklahoma, and then she did that 3 days in a row. Let's hit the women's basketball first, and then we'll do the Oklahoma series. The question on the outset is, should we have expected a little more from Miss Chrissy Curry?
Let's just, you had 3 draft picks. That's awesome. Great. Alabama women's basketball produced 3 WNBA draft picks this year, and that's really cool. You know, maybe that would indicate that you should have had a little more success in the with them all on the roster. But let's just be happy they got the 3 draft picks, I think, because that's a I don't follow the women's basketball team super closely, but this is not a normal occurrence, I don't think.
Lifelong member of the LA Sparks fandom, Joe Gaither, Sarah Ashley Barker, and Cameron Brink together, we're going to tear up the WNBA.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a dynamic duo.
I mean, I'm sorry. Sarah Ashley Barker drafted 9th overall by the LA Sparks.
Aaliyah Nye goes 13th to... Why is it not telling me the team? I don't know. I don't know any of these logos. Why would you only give me the logos, ESPN?
What? Okay, hold on. Here we go. Here we go. You said 13?
Yeah.
13 is... Oh, that's my... Is that,
looks like it was a trade from the Sparks.
Oh, that's round one. I just want round two. Round two. 13, Aaliyah Nye went to... You're right. I don't.
Why would you do this, ESPN? No one knows these logos.
With Kelsey Plum to Los Angeles. Oh, she's going to Vegas. Las Vegas Aces.
Okay.
Las Vegas Aces. She's going to the Aces. Yeah, we all know that logo. Yeah, right. And then in round three, Alabama got a third. Boom. Zay Green, DC. DC, I can see that logo. DC is, oh, goodness gracious. After one season, what the Mystics, right? Yeah, DC Mystics?
DC Mystics.
Okay, there we go. We Mystics, the Aces, and the Sparks.
I gotta brush up on my WNBA because.
Well, if it's not Sabrina Ionescu or, you know.
Man, not Alabama related, but the tweet gets brought up every now and then. The guy in 2013 that tweeted out, best sixth grade point guard I've ever watched, Paige Beckers, and goes on to get drafted first overall. Like, that's the greatest take in sports history, maybe. Man called his shot, and he was like, yeah, no, she's a stud. And sure enough. Heck yeah, good for her. I gotta brush up on some WNBA, I guess.
12 teams in the WNBA.
Start watching the Bama ladies.
Well, yeah, you're putting them in there. This is I'm gonna butcher it, but 2 years ago, I mean two years ago, Alabama had a draft pick as well, a top 10 draft pick. Alabama women's basketball draft picks overall. 2 years ago, they had one. Every Alabama women's player selected. Oh, okay, you're not gonna get it. You're not gonna get the Google to work for you right there. Will Miller, where's Will Miller when you need him? Because Will would have remembered that young lady's name 2 years ago. That was really, really good.
Jasmine Walker.
Yes.
2 years ago.
Yes.
We got Brittany Davis.
No, it was Jasmine Walker who I was thinking of. Yes. Well done. All right. So, do you want to just ignore the we should have expected more from Christy Curry with 3 draft picks, are we not qualified to have this conversation? That's kind of what I'm feeling like.
That might be more what it is, because I certainly am not.
Because my perception is that Alabama women's basketball did pretty good, and then that sweet six, that round of 32 game kind of went off the rails against Maryland.
Yeah, a little bit. We're probably not the right folks to break it down super, super deep, but. I mean, I do think there's room for a little bit of, I don't know, disappointment's the right word, but a little bit of maybe they should have done I guess disappointment is the right word, but I don't know. I feel bad putting disappointed on the team.
I think there is disappointment because you wanted to play some games in Alabama for the postseason when you knew that you were in hosting position, you're close, and you didn't make it. And then you were really close to getting back to Birmingham. Oh, so close to getting back and didn't make it. So, like, those two disappointments are there. But I think that your immediate rebuttal should be held in the other hand very, very evenly. Like, hey, buddy, you have 2 disappointments, but you've got some wins as well. 3 draft picks. Miss Christy Curry can recruit off that. I mean, period.
Yeah.
You can recruit off that. And I think that Miss Christy Curry, Coach Curry, has taken the program forward each year. May not have been the steps that you want to see, like, the big broad jump you want to see, but I think there has been steps each year.
Former Alabama cornerback Traquan Fagans back in the portal. Just another example of the grass is not always greener.
If you're not, I'm almost done worrying about kids going in the portal. Like,
I think
it's going to be such a loss.
And I kind of hate that we've become so numb to it now, because I do think that is problematic. Like, I don't think it should become such a normal thing where just every year it's like, oh, yeah, you're going to lose 5 or 6 kids, whatever.
I'm shocked. We haven't seen an Alabama name yet.
Me too. I was, I told Melissa when I got up this morning, like, this is either going to be a really annoying or a pretty cool day. And she was like, well, you know, why? Well, Alabama's either going to have 4 or 5 kids put their name in the portal, or they might not have anybody do it. So we'll see. You know, I don't know that you're only going to get 1 or 2. I think you're probably only going to get a handful, or like not really any. So we'll see.
DeBoer said Monday, we didn't lose anybody last year. We thought we were going to have. So look, if Billy X goes into the portal and you're like, oh no, I think that DeBoer probably is not like behind that decision, but is pretty comfortable with it.
I mean, I think if you come out of this spring transfer portal with all 3 quarterbacks still, you're pretty happy. Like, that's probably your biggest thing.
Yes. All right. So the other ladies' sports over the weekend, Alabama beats Oklahoma.
Oh.
Second, how about that for your second SEC series victory of the year? You lose the first game 5-1. You're up 1-0. You're up 1-0 going into the last inning. You give up 5 runs and you blow it. And you're like, oh my God, exactly. The entirety of our season. You cannot close out a game. You cannot do the little things right. You can't score enough runs and do the little things right and close out a game. What happens on Friday or Saturday? Saturday, the girls come out and was it 5-1, 6-1 that they ended up winning? Taking care of business, getting it done. And then Sunday, rubber match. You've got 1-1 most of the game. Audrey Vandegrift scores both runs. And then in the top of the 8th inning, Audrey Vandegrift pops one over the left field fence. Yeah, left field fence for a walk-off home run. Patrick Murphy goes insane. The Rhodes house goes nuts and walked him off. You beat the number one, number two. I think they were number two coming into Tuscaloosa. Now they're number 4. Mason, without getting too deep into it, because I think Katie will educate us tomorrow, my perception is, oh, if you did these little things and overcame these little hurdles against one of the nation's best teams, what will that do for the next portion of the season?
I agree. I think it feels like, you know, maybe it just took Murph convincing the team that, hey, you can do it. And now that they see it, they can visualize, like, hey, this is how we achieve the goals that we want. I would imagine that it probably changes things in this kind of back portion of the season here, or whatever, however much they have left here.
Absolutely, I would too. All right, we'll save the rest of that with Katie, because I don't want to steal her thunder, and she's a lot smarter than we are as well.
Watch her just tell us we're both totally wrong.
Yeah, it's like fine.
Had it all along.
If she says we're wrong, we're wrong. Warren Tyron Auto, they've been a Tuscaloosa and University of Alabama staple since 1961. They're in their third generation of family ownership. Warren Tyron Auto is your go-to place for all your automotive needs in Tuscaloosa. They've got 2 great locations to serve you. For tires, brakes, and alignment, check them out on 15th Street, 205-759-5505. For all your other automotive needs, you can see them on University Boulevard. Yeah, you can go where I'm going. You can see them on University Boulevard. Call them at 205-758-2739. Mason Woods grabs the 8A roster, because we're going to keep going. Yesterday, we talked about quarterbacks. And we talked all about the off-field hooey on Monday. Is the sport dying? If you want to talk about the lack of attendance, you can hear that on the Monday episode. But, Mason, we need to talk about these skill guys. Running backs, wide receivers. Actually, I don't care about you running backs. The wide receivers made me very, very, very excited. The wide receivers made me animalistic, made me visceral, made me...
It feels like, you know... And I don't want to put any jinx on them or anything.
Oh, yeah, but you're going there.
You know the picture. You know the Jerry Jeudy, Devontae, you know, the picture. That is kind of what we're feeling like this year a little bit. We might, I mean, Bama might be all the way back. Wide receiver, you.
And we didn't even see Ryan at all.
God.
At all. You got, okay, so we all know what we have in Ryan and Jeremy. Great. You saw that last year. I think both those guys are going to be a little bit more comfortable, sure, and probably 5% more productive. Great. It's the rest of it that is so exciting. Isaiah Horton, I want you to think about him and the ugly ass double pass that he saved.
Yeah, we've heard that Jeremy can throw. I do not believe you may have lied to someone, Jeremy Bernard. I think you may have told a fib, my friend. Because yes, we did see that that double pass. I think it was, I don't even remember who was quarterback. I want to say it was Austin Mack. You know, dumps it out to Jeremy Bernard on the left side, and he airs it out without a care in the world. And I understand they're in practice, so he was probably told, like, hey, just throw it. Just throw it regardless of what. So sure, whatever. But yeah, I mean, he just throws a limp duck into the air.
Quack, quack, quack.
Tumbles its way through the sky, and down comes freaking Isaiah Horton with it. I don't know how, like, it makes a circus catch.
Three or four defenders.
Yeah. I think he was in triple coverage. I mean, guys draped all over him. Like, just goes up, high points the ball, hauls it in, and everybody in the press box is like, you can immediately hear it. Did he catch that? He caught that. It was like, oh my. Because if you can catch that kind of ball, hell, you can catch anything. That was one of the worst passes I've ever seen.
I was impressed with the vertical, two different aspects. Going up over the three guys, great. But to come down and not fall, come down, keep your feet. He just kind of, Just like he came down from a dunk. Like a
ballerina.
Right. And the other guys fall down around him because it's kind of three or four guys go into a pile. And so obviously everybody's lost their balance. Other three or four guys fall down around him. Isaiah Horton turns and strolls to the end zone.
It was like a scene from like an anime when like they all fight and all the, like, the dust settles and there's one guy standing and it was Isaiah Horton.
It looked like straight out of College Football 25 when everybody gets out of your way and you got the guy just like
it was waltzing to the
end zone.
The Batman scene with the field collapsing behind him and here's Isaiah Horton, last man standing. Oh, he was that was a fantastic play. Yeah. To have that amount of body control and be so big is really, really impressive. Because, you know, we saw it with Ryan Williams last year, but you kind of expect a smaller, more nimble guy to be able to kind of twist and contort that way. I mean, Isaiah Horton is 6'4", 210. But he is able to bend and contort his body in various ways to allow him to catch the ball and then also stay balanced, stay on his feet. Very, very impressive wide receiver. I think he will probably thrive a lot in this offense. But there's more.
Yeah.
Much more.
All right, let me go over to football because I want to get this quote, this full quote. Was it? Where's my Ryan Grubb transcript? Right there. Ryan Grubb, Control F, RICO. How has Rico Scott progressed from Ryan Grubb's comments on Monday? First thing that stood out to me was his instinct in this game. Very intelligent, can play outside or in the slot, and will have a role. Can win in all three spots. Everywhere I've been where guys are able to get in different spots, and we do a good job with our offense and moving people around. People know where Ryan Williams is every play. For Rico to be able to create that versatility is really great for him. Now, that was Grubb, but I'm pretty sure, DeBoer had comment as well. Control F Rico. Yeah. On competition at wide receiver. Yeah. You've got some experienced guys coming back. You've got Isaiah in. I thought Rico Scott had a really nice spring. We expected that. Internally, we expected and we could see that happening throughout the fall and in December. You could go on and on.
Well, I mean, what was it, the Mercer game?
That was the Austin Mack. One
circus catch in the end zone that was like, oh my God, how did he catch that? And that was a nice throw too, but it was, a hell of a catch. So, I mean, I guess we kind of did see flashes of it. And it was when we did see flashes, it was like, oh, okay, he might be something. But I mean, he looked special on Saturday.
You let a lot of freshman receivers walk out of that door, but you didn't let Rico Scott walk out of that door.
I think that says a lot. I think a lot of the things that we said about Lotzier Brooks last week, you can say about Rico Scott. Just as dynamic, I think, underneath, is extremely shifty, is able to make guys miss. I think will be very, very electric with the ball in his hands if you can just get it to him. Just, oh man, this wide receiver room is deep.
So it takes me a little bit to the Nick Saban philosophy from back in the day that I always hated. And
give me six guys that are 5'10", 185 pounds.
not just that, but here are the three wide receivers that are going to play for all 12 games. Brother, coach, you're the greatest. But DeBoer, you have an asset here. Mm-hmm. Run these mother bleepers. Just run their legs off.
I mean,
run their legs off every game. And okay, you know, just rotate them.
Get another guy.
Yes. Yeah. Of course, Ryan and Jeremy are going to be on the field a lot and the more than everyone else. I'm not suggesting taking them off the field, but rotate this unit so that at the end of the year, Latsia Brooks and Derek Meadows and Rico Scott feel like, yeah, we had plenty of a role. We're good. I got plenty of touches. I can remember my three touchdowns that I got.
Yep. I don't want to transfer.
Run. You've got an embarrassment of riches, I think, at wide receiver. We didn't have any touch Jalen Hale, having a touch Cole Adams. And I just literally mentioned only the two. Like, I would just like to see a heavy, heavy rotation from, oh, Ryan, here's your two snaps, off for one. Two snaps, off for one. Two snaps, off for one. And you're just mixing everyone else in so that defensive back who's been guarding all 12 wide receivers is not only physically exhausted, but he's mentally exhausted. Because, wait, three snaps ago I had Ryan Williams, and he hit me with an inside stem. And now I have Ryan again. Is he going to inside stem me again? Or is he going to go inside, outside, inside? And then, oh, the last time, but the last rep wasn't against Ryan Williams. It was against Jeremy Bernard, and he went outside release. And just make them think.
Yes.
Like, the physicality is one thing, but when you give these defensive backs so many different looks with so many different tendencies, are you going to go press Derek Meadows?
Bye.
Okay. Like, what are you going to do? You're having to play these game plans in your head, and I'm having to think about five, six different guys of tendencies, and if I'm hitting them, I mean, I'm not saying take Ryan one on, one off. Sure. I'm not even saying every fifth play for Ryan. That's a silly suggestion. But you've got to mix him up enough to where I need to know my Jalen Hale game plan. Mm-hmm. I need to know my Cole Adams game plan. I need to know what happens if Rico Scott gets matchup on me. I need to know what happens if Latsia Brooks is about to run past me. Oh, he's about to run past me for 40 yards. Oh, 5-yard stop route, and I am way off of him. Like, you just have to mix it up, because I think you can confuse them just as much as physically exhaust them.
Yeah, I think you can. I think we saw a little bit of that last year, where I think at times DeBoer and Sheridan tried to get younger wide receivers involved to find out, kind of as a litmus test, like, hey, can we trust this guy? You saw it a little bit with Caleb Odom. I think they found out they could not trust that guy. And you know, other wide receivers kind of had a similar role last season, where I think it was, all right, well, we're going to try to get you in there, but if we can't trust you, we're not going to stick you in the rotation. And it feels like they trust 4, 5, 6 of these guys this year.
I saw this go for the weekend, but just the evaluation of bringing in Isaiah Horton and bringing in Latsia Brooks and Derek Meadows. Now, Derek Meadows, I think you can credit the coaching staff evaluating Isaiah Horton and evaluating Latsia Brooks. Derek Meadows was a high-end recruit that a lot of people were in on, that I think Alabama sort of stumbled into after losing Cam Coleman. Cam Coleman? Wasn't that the wide receiver from Ole Miss? Cam Coleman? It is a Cam Calhoun. Cam Calhoun is our defensive back. The number one wide receiver who ended up going to Ole Miss, big Auburn body guy.
Cam Coleman is at Auburn. That's the Auburn guy. Who are we thinking of?
I don't know. It doesn't matter anymore. Yeah. Went to Ole Miss. Went to Ole Miss. Big body guy.
I think you're on it.
And you just pivoted. And I think that maybe you might have outbid LSU. Maybe. So, but I'm not saying it's bad to get him. I'm just saying that I'm not sure that was a, hey, we went and scouted this guy and we found, like, Latsia Brooks, you absolutely, hey, 3-star receiver in New Jersey. We don't care what your star rating is. We know you're really, really, really good. We evaluated you ourselves and we like you. like, I think you can credit the coaching staff with Latsia Brooks and with selecting or getting Isaiah Horton out of the transfer portal. I think Derek Meadows might have fallen in your lap.
Possibly. Caleb Cunningham is the guy we were
thinking. That's right.
Yep. Caleb Cunningham. And, you know, just looking at Cunningham here, I do think you got a pretty good upgrade with Meadows. Cunningham 6'1", 190. Meadows is in that bigger body bigger body mold that I think Kalen DeBoer really, really likes. You know, what we see with Isaiah Horton. I'm just very excited about these receivers. I think given a year now where, you know, I have talked bad about Ty Simpson, I think at worst you're getting better quarterback play this year than you had last year. I'm very excited about what this offense could look like.
It's going to be fun. I think
is Jalen Ibakwe going to transfer?
Do you care?
I guess not, honestly.
I don't care. I don't want anyone to transfer. Sure. But if you're fourth string, fifth string, third string wide receiver.
I don't know where there's room for him in this receiver, you know, because Horton, I mean, Isaiah Horton, Ryan Williams, Jeremy Bernard, those are your top three. We got Rico Scott, Lotzier Brooks, Cole.
I think Adams, Rico Jaylen and Cole Hale. Are next. Rico Cole are next. And
probably Jalen Hale next. And then I mean.
I think Jalen and Bakwe is probably with those two freshmen.
Yeah.
In a little group. Good luck.
Could be playing corner.
Could he?
Probably not, honestly.
Right, because you look at these
corners. Could you be playing safety? No.
I wonder if wide receiver is probably just going to be his place where he could contribute on this team, and it's just going to be a matter of patience.
Maybe.
Because you're going to, I mean, end of the year, you lose Isaiah Horton and Jeremy Bernard just to eligibility. Mm-hmm. Ryan's got at least another year before he can go to the league. And so maybe you think, hey, me and Ryan can team it up in 26.
Go to the league together. Maybe that's the long-term plan.
There you go.
Ooh.
What else is on my list, Mason Woods? We're right at 56. We've hit the ancillary stuff with Nico. We hit the ancillary stuff with Colorado. We hit women's athletics a little bit. Alabama skill guys. Do you want to read Jihad Campbell's Beast write-up and talk about that? Because we've got the NFL draft next week. Or do you have any other comments or thoughts you want to get into?
No, I mean, you mentioned the running backs briefly. There wasn't really much to take away on Saturday about the running backs. You know, it's kind of hard to evaluate them when nobody's getting tackled. So, and that's physicality is such a big part of a running back's job. It's hard to really see how good they are. I mean, that being said, I think we did see just about everybody. I don't recall anybody being out running back wise. I don't know. But yeah, you know, not really much to take away. I think the wide receivers, you can, there's a lot more to analyze there because, you know, part of their game is not as physical as it is at running back. You're running back, you are getting hit every play. You're having to bounce off tackles every play. So seeing them go take reps against air, reps where they're not getting tackled, does not really mean a whole lot for me at running back. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited about the guys. I still think Richard Young is going to be a very good running back this year. Excited about Daniel Hill. I think Jam Miller will probably lead the room, but I'm interested to see if that lasts the entire season.
All right. Yeah, that's why I didn't really talk about the running backs because they didn't – no tackling. I don't really care. I don't want to watch you play thud running back.
Because, it does nothing.
Yeah, you're not running as hard. The defenders are not tackling as – yeah, you nailed it. All right, so next week is the NFL draft. Last week, we talked about Jihad Campbell and his NFL write-up from The Beast. Dane Brugler writes up The Beast, and it is 523 pages. If you are looking for any NFL draft information, it is a part of the Athletic website. It is the only reason that I subscribe to the Athletic each and every year. The rest is bonus. But here we go. We read Jalen Milroe's write-up just to kind of see what we think about the NFL. And Mason, you could be thinking about it because yesterday reported that Jalen Milroe is meeting with the Seahawks and Rams. So now he's got Seahawks, Rams, Steelers, Giants, Lions, just lots of teams, Dolphins, all after him. So that is going to be really interesting. But here is Jihad Campbell's scouting report from Dane Brugler, who I consider probably your best NFL scouting journalist or so. All right, here we go. Jihad Campbell's background. Jihad Campbell was born and raised in South New Jersey with his mother, Stephanie Hopkins, who was a nurse. He started playing football at the age of four and competed in basketball and track growing up. Campbell enrolled at Tiger Creek Regional High, Gloucester Township, where he was teammates with current Los Angeles cornerback Tarheeb Steele. He primarily lined up at defensive end and posted 41 tackles, two sacks, and one forced fumble as a sophomore, helping the team to a 7-4 finish and a 2019 state playoffs. His junior season in 2020, Campbell earned first-team All-State, 45 tackles, 7 sacks, and a pandemic-shortened 7-game season. He also added wide receiver duties to his resume, 15 catches for 249 yards and 2 touchdowns. After the 2020 season, Campbell transferred to IMG in Bradenton, Florida, for the second half of his junior year and senior season. He moved to an off-ball linebacker role and was teammates with several top recruits, including Tyler Booker and Keon Sab. Cornerbacks Daylon Everett and running back Catron Allen. Campbell earned Under Armour All-American honors after his senior season. A five-star recruit, Campbell was the second-ranked edge rusher in the 2022 recruiting class and the number three recruit in Florida. He ranked as the number 21 recruit nationally after his freshman season. Campbell attended several camps and started to pile up offers, including from his home state, Rutgers, which hired Campbell's Timber Creek head coach, Rob Hinson, as a player and as a player personnel analyst following the 2019 season. Several national programs entered the mix during his junior season, including Michigan, Ohio State, Oregon, Tennessee, and Texas. In March of 2021, Campbell announced the top eight of Clemson, Florida, Georgia, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Penn State, Rutgers, and Texas A&M. He committed to Clemson in July of 2021 as a hybrid defensive end. He was locked in with the Tigers throughout his senior season until a few weeks before signing day, when then defensive coordinator Brent Venables left for the head coaching job at Oklahoma, and Campbell scrambled to reopen his recruitment. He took a last-minute visit, including to Alabama, which had offered him late in the process. Campbell committed to the Tide and became Nick Saban's top-ranked recruit in the 2022 cycle, just ahead of Tyler Booker. After three seasons in Tuscaloosa, he elected to skip his senior season and enter the NFL draft. Going down, strengths, big athlete who can really run and cover ground. Led all linebackers at the combine in shuffle sprint, 19.45 miles per hour, and wave drills, 11.01 miles per hour. Works well laterally and as a run defender with quick trigger to redirect and drive. Long and secure tackler who breaks down well in the open field. Physical in the hole with stopping power when he explodes into the ball carrier. Dynamic run and pass blitzer inside and out who slips through the gaps and blows up plays. See 2024 LSU. Can burst and bend the corner when lined up on the edge. Effective closing speed from the back end. Shows promise in coverage because of his speed down the seam and his short area quickness on quick routes. Made strides when reading the eyes of the quarterback to jump into passing lanes. Filled up the stat sheet in 2024, at least 8 tackles in 10 of the 13 games. Here we go. Weaknesses. Off-ball instincts are still developing. Can be late on read plays. Definitely. Doesn't have great peripheral vision and runs himself into blocks. Can be blown backwards when he stops his feet to catch tackles. See first quarter touchdown against 2024 Vanderbilt tape. missed tackles usually comes when he attacks high, hurting ability to wrap. Had multiple face mask flags on tape. Not as aggressive as a take-on player as he could be, taking on blocks. Still learning how to cycle through route concepts. Grabby in man coverage when he doesn't trust his leverage. Missed the second half of the 2024 bowl game with a left shoulder injury, which required surgery. March 2025, to repair a slight tear in his labrum. He missed the 23 season opener after requiring a knee scope during fall practice. Summary. Here we go. Here's your summary. A two-year starter at Alabama, Campbell played the Mike and Will linebacker roles in defensive coordinator Kane Womack's 4-2-5 base scheme, while also lining up off the edge and slightly walked out in space. A former five-star recruit as an edge rusher, he made the transition to off-ball linebacker and developed into the most productive defender on Alabama's 2024 squad, leading the team in tackles with 117, tackles for loss with 11.5, sacks with 5, and forced fumbles with 2. With his size and length, Campbell is a good-looking athlete, and his sideline-to-sideline speed, lateral agility, and short area burst to out-leverage and finish the ball carrier. He doesn't always trust what he sees and tends to be inconsistent taking on blocks. Those issues made him more effective outside the hashes on tape, where he didn't have to sort physically or mentally through the muck. Overall, Campbell is an explosive physical athlete with the developing instincts to impact the game as a run defender, cover man blitzer from various angles and depth. Some teams like him best as a full-time edge rusher. He is a first-round talent. Although the medical feedback will be crucial for his final grade, Brugler gives him a first- to second-round grade and has him as the 14th overall prospect in this year's draft.
Nailed it once again. I mean,
I'm taking a deep breath, please.
Yeah, I think he pretty much hit the nail on the head with all of the weaknesses. You know, I think we did see some of those things a lot of times, not a lot of times last year, but saw a lot of those things sometimes last year. I still obviously believe he will be a first round selection. I think he, you know, is 14 is probably a pretty good guess around where he would be selected. I think he's probably in that 12 to like 18 range. I'll be interested to see where he lands. I think there's a few teams where he would be a really, really good fit. I still think the Bucks would be a good fit. I think the Cowboys would be a good fit. But yeah, I'm excited to see where he goes. He will be a first round selection. I think he will be a productive player in the NFL.
No, I think he's going to be a really good pro. He fits this. He fits the modern NFL very, yeah. Very well.
Rangy linebackers. It's not Ray Lewis's NFL anymore.
No, it's not. I mean, Ray was rangy. No.
Well, yeah, but also. Who's a better?
Lance Briggs, my big tank playing linebacker. No. Golly, the Bears need to go ahead and get rid of Tre'Von Edmonds.
But, I mean, you do. That's just like that is what the NFL is moving to. You know,
but what happens when
is the NFL slowly moving towards positionless, like how the NBA has gone towards positionless basketball? Is that what the NFL is basically moving towards?
Positionless defenders?
Yes.
Because if I were like, I would take Campbell higher because he can do a lot. Like,
you can stick him anywhere back there, basically.
Exactly.
Oh, you need to fill a spot? Get over there, Campbell. Like, yeah. Is this what we're seeing?
He's an elite athlete. And as much as I think Tyler Booker is probably going to be a great guard, I think Campbell's your best Alabama player in this draft. And I'm going to miss him a lot because that he was a head crusher. And I think that he only got to that leadership point where you need that. You know, everybody's been crying for 5 years about Alabama getting an alpha back on defense. Mm-hmm. And where's the next Reuben Foster? Jihad was growing into that, but I think he didn't get there until maybe late October of this year. Like, that's not criticism of you, Jihad. Those things take time. I think the Alabama fan base would have loved to have seen what you would have done barking at these young men, keeping, you know, the standards high in 2025. But dude, go make your money. Go make your money.
But yeah, I'm with you.
I think he stepped into that a little too late for maybe the Alabama fans to like really appreciate him for being like the Reuben Fosters, like the 32, like the
CJ Mosley.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's okay. Then he'll tear it up in the NFL, and then they'll get to say, "I remember when he was at Bama."
Yeah, he's going to be just like those guys. He's going to make money, and he's going to be feared just like those guys. Rashawn Evans was with the Titans for a half minute. He was good until he wasn't. Like, he's going to be just like those guys to where he's going to crack some skulls in the NFL and people are going to be like, man, he was awesome at Alabama. And we're probably going to remember him more fondly than we do today.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. I would have loved to have seen him on this defense this year.
Golly.
Because we've talked about the linebackers, how that's a bit of a question mark. And obviously you do have some injuries and things like that, but it's there's some question marks there. With Jihad Campbell, there would have been no question marks.
Yeah. Dave Dexter, give us a like. Great, along with your wife. Awesome. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate you watching the show right there on the Facebook machine, just like everybody else on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. You watch this on the Bama Central YouTube channel as well. Mason, we have hit almost everything, but I didn't load the voicemail. We got a wacky voicemail. Well, maybe not a maybe it's a serious voicemail. Maybe I don't know. I don't recognize this voice. I didn't recognize the name in the back end. And like we said, like we always say, if you don't tell us your name, I'm not going to spoil the name that it says in the back end. So this person did not say their name, but here we go.
Yes, my comments on the Alabama Crimson Tide. Coach DeBoer is in over his head. He's a very poor coach. He doesn't coach discipline. His lack of knowledge, college football, is very strong. He has no business being the head coach at the University of Alabama. In major losses last year, him and his coaches made no adjustments to the obvious problems that they had. Keeps telling us things that he's going to correct in the following practice, they never get corrected. They had the highest number of penalties in college football last year. DeBoer is in over his head. He needs to be fired immediately and go back to high school coaching. Thank you.
All right, Mason's Googling that, the penalties last year, but I swear I know this voice.
Yes, my comments on the Alabama Crimson Tide. Coach DeBoer is in over his head. He's a very poor coach. He doesn't coach discipline, his lack of knowledge, college football is very strong. He has no business being the head coach at the University of Alabama. In major losses last year, him and his coaches made no adjustments to the obvious problems that they had. Keeps telling us things that he's going to correct in the following practice. They never get corrected. They had the highest number of penalties in college football last year. DeBoer is in over his head. He needs to be fired immediately and go back to high school coaching. Thank you.
I swear I know that voice, Mason. I can't place it. I don't know who that is, but it doesn't matter. Regardless, thank you for calling, sir. 205-462-7340, extension 800. You can call on the voicemail line just like this young man. Leave us a rebuttal to anything that we had to say or anything that you want to get on the show, anything that he just said. Do you have penalty numbers for NCAA penalty numbers?
Yeah, New Mexico was your leader at 9.8 per game, 9.8 penalties per game.
Yeah.
Alabama had 7.4. Now, that's not
probably
great.
The highest in the SEC,
probably,
though.
I would imagine. Yeah, Texas A&M, highest in the SEC. Tennessee, higher. So not even highest in the SEC.
DeBoer over its head?
Ole Miss, higher. Fourth highest in the SEC.
Go back to high school? When did that man coach high school? I'm sorry. Are you getting confused with Nate Oates?
Yeah, I don't.
Listen to this again. Is this someone's? Did someone plug this into an AI? Did someone plug this voice into? Is this AI? That's my question. Like, there's something.
Yeah, my comments on the Alabama Crimson Tide. Coach DeBoer is in over his head. He's a very poor coach. He doesn't coach discipline. His lack of knowledge.
All right, let's take this in pieces. It's not AI. I'm teasing. It's not AI. Thank you for calling.
Kalen DeBoer, though.
Very poorly coached. Very poor coach. Lack of discipline. Do you think last year's team, I mean, we can just be objective. Do you think last year's team was disciplined? Not championship discipline, no.
I mean, I don't think you could say they weren't disciplined.
Yeah, I think they were
disciplined.
To a degree.
Yes, to a degree. There is always nuance with these kinds of, it is never black and white. They were in that gray area.
Yeah, Kendrick Law.
Yeah, I mean, there were some slip-ups. Malachi Moore, you know, had Kendrick, his moment against Vanderbilt.
Yeah, Kendrick Law blowing up in Tennessee, you know, 15-yard penalty at the worst moment. Malachi Moore blowing up. They sure, definitely were not.
That goes back. You go back to Saban, Jermaine Burton slapping the fan on the field. These are not new things. This happens every year in college football for every single team in the country. So it's not a pervasive discipline issue on the within the program.
Well, I think you make it. I think you are illustrating a good point. And when does this become? Was last year Kevin DeBoer's program? I'm just asking. Gun to your head, Mason, was last year Kalen DeBoer's program?
It was not.
I mean, when does it become his program?
I think.
Was it Nick Saban's program? No, even still. No. It was kind of some weird conglomerate. Again,
yes, the answer is somewhere in the middle, like it is with everything.
You know, of course, you went 9-4, and DeBoer is leading that, and you can say the problems are all on DeBoer. But like,
DeBoer's coaching Saban's players, for the most part. Still, even.
Keep going. We'll take this piece by piece. Thank you, sir. Calling on the voicemail line, 205-462-7340, extension 800. You can be like this gentleman right here.
College football is very strong. He has no business being the head coach at the University of Alabama. In major losses last year, him and his coaches made no adjustments to the obvious problems that they had. Keeps telling us.
All right. I do got to give you credit. But some, yes. The losses, the three losses, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Oklahoma, and against Michigan. You're right, sir.
So, I would like for our friend to provide us with any bit of example, any one adjustment that was not made, because I do agree. But we have to back things up with evidence here. We can't just make.
Do you think he wanted to adjust the quarterback? Who was playing quarterback out at Oklahoma? That would have been a move I would have supported.
Yeah.
I don't know what else you would have done defensively out at Oklahoma.
Not much. Pretty perfect.
Now, that Vanderbilt game was pathetic defensively. Yeah. The Vanderbilt game just seemed like the team was not ready. That was plugged in. It was just not. And you can say, welcome to the SEC, Kalen DeBoer. Every week you got to be on your A game, maybe. And maybe there's a lesson learned there. But don't we have to give first-year coaches a little room to learn some lessons who have never been in the SEC before? I know it hurts to learn the lesson against Vanderbilt. Sure. I know that makes the lesson extra bad and extra, ooh, you guys lost to Vanderbilt. But like at the end of the day, the concept is still the same. Week in, week out, diligence, and Vanderbilt just taught you the lesson. Like, do not give a little, hey, this is what it's like in the SEC. You're this first-year
Alabama,
coach.
Joe, there's no room for error. You have to be perfect. Kalen DeBoer doesn't even deserve this job. He's done nothing to deserve this job.
Crucify him. Crucify him. If he doesn't raise in 3 days, he doesn't deserve to be the coach.
It's just you people. I can't with you people. Like,
things that he's going to correct in the following practice, they never get corrected. They had the highest number of penalties in college football last year. DeBoer is in over his head. He needs to be fired immediately and go back to high school coaching. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just the last part. I have to ask, because I got comments on this too over the weekend, the attendance tweet that I tweeted, and I wasn't even trying to be bad. It was just like, this is how many people are at 8A. It doesn't look like people are excited. Somebody comments about, well, it's because they made a mistake hiring DeBoer. They should have fired him in November. And I'm just like, what? You have to be an internet troll. You cannot be believing this. Like, I wish I could find the pathway in my brain to think these thoughts of, let's fire a coach that went 9-4, who just had a top three recruiting class, who dealt with all kinds of turnover, who
took Washington.
Oh my God. Like, am I stupid? And maybe that's the truth, but like,
I think someone is stupid, but I don't believe it is you.
And it's fine if it's, you could say in the comments, it's totally like, you're not going to hurt my feelings, but like, is 9-4 for a first year coach not good? Is a top three recruiting class when you're behind the eight ball? You come to school with one commit who didn't end up being in the class, by the way. Okay. You reworked the entire recruiting class in 11 months and you signed the number three class. Oh, by the way, you didn't have disaster as far as roster turnover before the season. Yeah, a little, sure. But like, you're also replacing the most established head coach of all of our lifetimes. I'm sure some of the people who are watching were around with Coach Bryant, but I was not. Like, so Coach Saban, definitely the most established dynasty of my lifetime. ain't no bumps in the road here. And no bumps allowed. Like, am I stupid to think that, yeah, pretty good? No, of course, I recognize not good enough.
Sure. You should have beat Vanderbilt.
Standard.
Should have beat Oklahoma.
definitely I can point at the black guys in the season. But am I just stupid? Like, you fired DeBoer after that.
Okay. Who are you hiring?
Oh, thank you. That's the question in my brain. That was where I was leading. Thank you. I didn't even tell you to say that. But that's...
Who would you have coach this team that's going to do a better job? It's not Lane Kiffin.
That's the answer I want. That's the answer I want these people to answer. Exactly.
You're not getting Steve Sarkisian. You're not getting Kirby Smart.
We're going to get Kirby to come home.
What in the hell makes you think Kirby Smart would leave his alma mater to come coach Alabama?
Well, Alabama's home.
No, it's not. Alabama is not home to him.
I don't understand.
There's not another coach out there. There's not another Nick Saban waiting in the rafter for you to say, "Oh, we got our guy." You might have one here. It's insane.
Like, let's find out. Let's give him 3 years to find out, please. Like, and yes, he goes 8-4 this year. He goes 8-4 the next year. We'll say, shoot, we didn't get the next Nick Saban, and we got to figure out what we want to do now.
Sure.
But like, I don't understand the standard, and I never have. I never have understood championship or nothing. Championship or nothing. Championship or we hate you.
Zero
championship
for
or you stink. You're the worst. I don't understand. I appreciate the call, sir, but I think your premise, you're either trolling me, which I definitely appreciate. Mm-hmm. Fine, don't worry about it. No problem. Keep trolling me. It's cool. Or you're just not in touch with how sports work. And I don't want to say that because, like, come on.
It sounds harsh.
Yes.
That is the case. I'll say it. You don't understand what you're watching if that's the opinion that you have. Now, I do not believe that. I think, like you said, this is more likely than not someone trolling a bit. But if this is a genuine opinion, you don't know what you're watching when you sit down in front of your TV on Saturdays.
Like, okay, I'm with you. The last month of the season was hard to watch.
Sure.
The last month of the season was hard to watch. From the Oklahoma game to the end was not easy football to watch. And you're probably thinking, is this our fate forever? Is this our fate with this guy? To watch us play lackluster football against Oklahoma and us not really look inspired against Michigan. And us to, okay, whatever. Like, I can understand that would set some fear.
But I guess, but even then, like, it's been 7 games, man.
What? It's
8 games, whatever it had been.
I don't understand how the fan base is smart. They know these guys. They know all the turnover that they had. They know who's been recruited. They know who's left. They know all this stuff.
Yep.
I don't understand how you can't look at this past year and think, that's a vacuum. That's a singular year. That's a one-year scenario. You just dealt with all these circumstances. Like, and maybe that's just, hey, Joe, you're giving too much grace. But like, to me, Coach DeBoer, that's just patchwork. Get us through. Get your feet on the ground. Yeah. Build whatever foundation you can. And we'll actually give you some actual judgment this year. Now, of course, there were things last year that I didn't love. There were things last year I did love. Like, but there's still so much of this. What's the future actually going to be? How much of this is just transitionary? Just we're doing this to make it work for now. Like, of course, last year was real football and we paid attention to it. But again, it's viewed in a vacuum. The November to the bowl game, I don't think is a trend. I think November to a bowl game to the bowl game was, buddy, this group's out of gas. This group, this unit, yeah. we exhausted all of our resources offensively with Jalen Milroe and this offensive line, Elijah Pritchard, and these injuries that are all over the place. Lots of people were hurt during the bowl game. And, oh, my gosh, we're just – good job. Let's all get out of here.
We have talked about this so many times on the show since the conclusion of the season. This year was so much about just getting to the finish line and just trying to hold the ship together with duct tape and super glue. Like, now is when the job really begins for DeBoer this season. Last year, like you said,
go 9-4 again this year, and I won't call you as crazy. I won't agree with you. I will not agree with you, but I won't call you crazy.
I think that seat is heating up a little bit. You go 9-4 again. You know, Kayla, that burner's turned on just a hair. He's having some meetings with Greg Byrne this summer. Sure. But to be there right now is just ridiculous.
One brain cell. I appreciate the call. You guys can call at 205-462-7340, extension 800 on the voicemail line. We've heard from Dax. We've heard from that mystery man. You can identify yourself if you like. Looking to hear from Roy from Lake Gunnersville. I did text him the other day, Dax's call, and he goes, "Ooh, I guess I need to call." And then same thing with Hunter. And Hunter's, "Oh, I need to call." So, Dax, well done. Stirring up the calls. We appreciate you, sir, doing that yesterday on the program. We've been live. We've been live in the Derek Daniels State Farm Studios. You've been listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on Amazon. You've been watching us on the Bama Central YouTube channel. You've been watching us on my own Facebook, Twitter machines at JoeGaither6. Please follow Mason Woods at MAWoods_ on the Twitter machine. Tell a friend about the show. We do it 5 days a week right here in the Derek Daniels State Farm Studios, right here in Northport. What are we, 3 miles away from the stadium, roughly, about so? So we're right in the shadow of Bryant-Denny Stadium, talking Alabama athletics 5 days a week for you on Bama Central and BamaCentral.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's edition of the Joe Gaither Show on Bama Central. Keep up with Joe on all his social media pages at JoeGaither6. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and be sure to read us daily at BamaCentral.com.